She slept in a lean-to room at the back of the house. It had a window which she learned to open and close again in the dark without making a sound, even though there also slept in the lean-to room at first her oldest nephew, and then the two oldest, and then the three. She had lived there 8 years before she opened the window for the first time. She had not opened it a dozen times, hardly, before she discovered that she should not have opened it at all. She said to herself, "That's just my luck." The sister-in-law told the brother. Then he remarked her changing shape, which he should have noticed some time before. He was a hard man. Softness and gentleness and youth. He was just 40, and almost everything else except a kind of stubborn and despairing fortitude and the bleak heritage of his blood pride had been sweated out of him. He called her whore. He accused the right man. Young bachelors, or sawdust Casanovas anyway, were even fewer in number than families. But she would not admit it, though the man had departed 6 months ago. She just repeated stubbornly, "He's going to send for me. He said he would send for me." Unshakable, sheep-like, having drawn upon that reserve of patient and steadfast fidelity upon which the Lucas Birches depend and trust, even though they do not intend to be present when the need for it arises. 2 weeks later, she climbed again through the window. It was a little difficult this time. "If it had been this hard to do before, I reckon I would not be doing it now," she thought. She could have departed by the door, by daylight. Nobody would have stopped her. Perhaps she knew that. But she chose to go by night and through the window. She carried a palm leaf fan and a small bundle tied neatly in a bandana handkerchief. It contained, among other things, 35 cents in nickels and dimes. Her shoes were a pair of his own, which her brother had given to her. They were but slightly worn, since in the summer neither of them wore shoes at all. When she felt the dust of the road beneath her feet, she removed the shoes and carried them in her hand. She has been doing that now for almost 4 weeks. Behind her, the 4 weeks, the evocation of far is a peaceful corridor paved with unflagging and tranquil faith and peopled with kind and nameless faces and voices. Lucas Birch? I don't know. I don't know of anybody by that name around here. This road? It goes to Pocahontas. He might be there. It's possible. Here's a wagon that's going a piece of the way. It will take you that far. Back rolling now behind her, a long, monotonous succession of peaceful and undeviating changes from day to dark and dark to day again, through which she advanced in identical and anonymous and deliberate wagons, as though through a succession of creak-wheeled and limp-eared avatars, like something moving forever and without progress across an urn. The wagon mounts the hill toward her. She passed it about a mile back down the road. It was standing beside the road, the mules asleep in the traces and their heads pointed in the direction in which she walked. She saw it, and she saw the two men squatting beside a barn beyond the fence. She looked at the wagon and the men once, a single glance all-embracing, swift, innocent, and profound. She did not stop. Very likely the men beyond the fence had not seen her even look at the wagon nor at them. Neither did she look back. She went on out of sight, walking slowly, the shoes unlaced about her ankles, until she reached the top of the hill a mile beyond. Then she sat down on the ditch bank with her feet in the shallow ditch and removed the shoes. After a while, she began to hear the wagon. She heard it for some time. Then it came into sight, mounting the hill. The sharp and brittle crack and clatter of its weathered and ungreased wood and metal is slow and terrific. A series of dry, sluggish reports carrying for a half mile across the hot, still, pine-winey silence of the August afternoon.